Mr. Chairman, we may begin.
Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. This is the Upper San Gabriel Valley Municipal Water District Board Meeting, March 24th, 8 a.m. Looking at the agenda, we'll go to item number one, which is Pledge of Allegiance. So can we get that queued up, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. We'll go to item number two, and which is a roll call of the board of directors. And I'll ask Christy Hawkins, can you take attendance as well as you'll be taking, calling out directors for roll call votes too from here on out. So, Christy?
Yes, President Chavez, thank you. At this time, we'll like to ask the directors to state your name for the record. And we have Director Fellow.
Anthony Fellow.
Director Trevino.
Charles Trevino.
Director Garcia.
Katarina Garcia.
Director Santana.
Jennifer Santana.
And Director Chavez.
Ed Chavez.
Okay, we have a quorum and all directors are in attendance. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to item number three, which is the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion?
A move, Trevino.
It's been moved by Fellow, seconded by Director Trevino. Any questions, comments, discussion? If not, we'll take a roll call vote. And Christy, can you conduct that, please?
Yes, of course. Roll call vote. Director Fellow?
Aye.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Garcia?
Aye.
Director Santana?
Aye.
And Director Chavez?
Aye. Thank you. That passes on a 5-0 vote. We'll go to item number four, public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board of directors this morning may do so at this time. And Christy, do we have any people there in the audience?
President Chavez, we have received no written comments, and I see no hands raised at this time. Thank you.
Okay. So if anybody wishes to address us later on, I'll be happy to entertain that. We'll go to item number five, which is the consent calendar. There are several items on there. So is there a motion to approve the consent calendar?
Moved, Santana.
Second, Fellow.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? If not, Christy, please call the roll.
Roll call. Director Fellow.
Aye.
Director Trevino?
Aye.
Director Santana?
Aye.
Director Garcia?
Aye.
And Director Chavez?
Aye. Thank you. That passes on a 5-0 vote. We'll go to item number 6A, and it's the water management presentation. So, Mr. Love, can you lead us into that discussion?
Yeah, so this is something we have been doing for the last couple of years, is when we have an opportunity to bring in some presenters and to talk about various topics related to water. We refer to this sometimes as our Water 101 series. And today I've asked both Steve Johnson and Tony Zampiello, Executive Director of WaterMaster, to present to us information on, you know, some management entities within the basin. One is the Protective Association, which has been around for a very long time. We do hear a bit about the Protective Association, but I think we certainly could learn more about their history and their role and function, as well as the something called the Distribution Committee, which some of the board members may never heard about, but I think it's important. It's an entity that does help make decisions about basin management, and it's important we understand their function. And then I've asked Steve to talk about the river judgment, some of the river water master accounting, and as well as some water master analysis that he has done every year related to the establishment by the Water Master Board of the operating safe yield. And so with that, I'm going to ask Tony to go first, and I'm going to turn it over to Tony and Steve. Tony, you're muted.
I'm also half asleep. This is an early meeting in COVID. Thanks for having us. I guess what I'm going to do is give you a quick kind of overview of how everybody fits together, and then Steve's going to talk about the Tom, did you want me to go first with the Protective Association or stay with the order that we had?
I want you to go about the Protective Association. Whatever order you had planned to speak, I'm going to have Tony go first, and then Steve will get into the details of the River Water Master Accounting.
So, you know, the board is, thanks for having me this morning. The board has asked me questions over the last couple of years about the Protective Association. So we put together a couple of slides to kind of explain what's going on, why we have this association and why it continues to exist today. But it's funny, you know, it wasn't the first organized group of water producers on the river. The Committee of Nine was actually the first group. And the Committee of Nine kind of saved the basin's tail, you know, from 1916 to 1931, there was a drought, much like the drought that we're experiencing now. The Committee of Nine had spread some water up in the canyon to keep that production going. And they spread almost 12,000 acre feet a year, but there was much more water coming down the canyon. And so they were a group of producers and diverters up in the canyon. And the Protective Association was actually the second group formed. They were formed in 1920. And their explicit function was to prevent obstruction or diversion of flows on the San Gabriel River and to appropriate any unappropriated flows on the San Gabriel River. Now, keep in mind that the facilities in the canyon didn't exist at the time, and they actually were very key in how everything was shaped up in the canyon. So next slide. The other interesting thing that I found out, you know, part of what my board has assigned me to do is that before I sail off into the sunset in 10 to 15 years, to put together some history for everybody that is left behind so they can know what's going on. And I actually did some research and I found out something interesting that Pasadena, city of Pasadena, had been active in our basin for quite a few years. And they had even been active with Mulholland in trying to see if they could get some of the flows from the Owens River. And then ultimately they were one of the charter cities that helped put together Metropolitan. But I get a lot of questions about the Baldwin Park Key Well. The Baldwin Park Key Well, as it turns out, was drilled in 1931 when a group of folks that were concerned about basin levels, the U.S. Geological Service, City of Pasadena, L.A. County Flood Control, and the Department of Agriculture got together and they saw the need to better track groundwater levels in the basin. So Pasadena committed to a maximum of $1,000 towards it. The Protective Association with this group donated the plot of land that the Baldwin Park Key Well is on, and Flood Control and the Department of Agriculture all helped to put that well together and to set up the monitoring of it. The other big milestone for the Protective Association was in 1932, they actually sued the city of Pasadena. And the background behind that is that previous to that, city of Pasadena had actually floated a bond for $10 million to build the dam that is now the Morris Dam in the canyon. In fact, those of you that have worked at down at Met and board members, John Morris, the rep from San Marino, it actually, it was his grandfather that designed and help build that dam. And it, I can't find anything on the real history of the back and forth, but clearly the folks in the valley had to have seen the fact that this was coming, because Pasadena floated the bond. They had applied with the state for a license to divert up to 40,000 acre feet out of the canyon annually. And they actually started moving on for construction when the Protective Association actually filed suit. It took 2 years of back and forth and Metropolitan being involved. And keep in mind, all during this time, the Metropolitan Water District was coming together, but the aqueduct wasn't completed. There wasn't Colorado River water to the valley or any of the producers or any of the water purveyors in our area yet. And so in 1934, the Protective Association and City of Pasadena settled their dispute. And so the terms of it were that City of Pasadena could finish construction of what ended up being called Morris Dam. MWD agreed to purchase the dam. Then Pasadena could take up to 4,000 acre feet a year until such time that they converted and got Metropolitan water. And then the last bullet here is the most important. The Protective Association, through all of this, obtained two licenses that we still maintain today for 400,000 acre feet of diversion off of the San Gabriel River from the mountains to the sea. Next slide.
Tony, Stephen O'Neill has his hand up. Steve, do you want to comment or question?
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm just curious. In 1920, the Protective Association, were they farmers, or what was their interest? Were they?
Yeah, Stephen, they were. One of the slides talks about the makeup, but they were actually the way that the assessments were set up. We talked about later. They were actually it was first based on land owned, either by or land that was serviced by the whatever company existed at the time.
Okay.
I've got one slide that kind of shows how it converted later. But
thanks. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's fine. Let's see. Did we jump? Are we good? Yes. Okay. So you know, I get asked a lot of times, what does a Protective Association own? Well, the Protective Association doesn't own any physical facilities with means to capture or store water. But they've been able to operate for so many years because in 1937, they entered into an agreement with the Los Angeles County Flood Control District that specifically set up that the Flood Control District would do the spreading of the water under the license if the Protective Association maintained the records and took all the water level measurements in the basin. So that was the trade-off. In 1945, a separate agreement with Met, because remember now Met bought and owned for some time the reservoir. There was a separate agreement for the Protective Association to store that water behind the dam, because without that critical component and being able to store behind the dam and then release it in such a way that the spreading could be controlled, it wasn't as effective. So interestingly enough, just from the beginning of this partnership, this working and these licenses, they were able to increase basin levels by 55 feet between 1935 and 1943. But you have to keep in mind, again, we're talking about not upper district wasn't organized or formed yet. So this is all the natural flow. And that means that obviously the rain was there so they could capture it in those years. Next slide. So the membership is water users from the mountains to the sea. So for example, at one point when we were talking about our concerns or making sure that our concerns were incorporated into the legislation for the the National Monument, which started out as a national recreation area on the river, one of the things that we considered was having actually this protective association be the lead on that to make sure that those rights were protected through that process. At the end of the day, the water associations took their own roles and worked with that. But that's one instance where the protective association might serve a different purpose. But we have two types of members. They're contractual and non-contractual members. And it was voluntarily set up this way. And I'm going to show, I have a slide a little bit later that shows how it breaks down. But basically the non-contractual members are any of the water purveyors who want to belong to the association. That's $50 a year. And then the contractual members are divided up by acre feet of production within each area. And then they're assigned a portion of the expenses. As Stephen and I talked about a little bit, it was originally set up to be landowners and water purveyors. And then as the complexion of the valley changed, it moved to this methodology of the contractual members paying by acre foot. The assessments at the time were based on acres of land owned or served. And then in 60, we changed to this approach that we have now. Next slide, please. So this is the breakdown in acre feet of how we apply the assessments. The assessment that was just adopted by the executive committee and is going to go to the board in April, it was 35 cents an acre foot. And the couple of things that stick out on this that, and obviously some of you might have questions, but if you look at Central Basin at the top and water replenishment at the bottom, they're split almost completely 50-50. That was an arrangement that they made probably now 10 years ago. I don't know if Stephen remembers when Central and West Basin were one group, but I used to have to go down almost every year to Central Basin and explain to their board the purpose and the need for the protective association, because at times their board would be reluctant to pay the assessment, or at least I shouldn't say that they at least had questions about it. But the interesting one on this list as well, excuse me, is the city of Glendora. You see the city of Glendora is there. That's because in 1960, when they decided to do this, for those of you that kind of know the history of the member agencies, Three Valleys, which used to be Pomona Valley, MWD, they were actually part of MET for different reasons earlier than Upper District. But when that system was set up in 1960, what's now Three Valleys, that group of purveyors and the board there chose not to opt into, they didn't want to opt into the protective association. So thankfully, City of Glendora stepped up. City of Glendora is a contractual member. They do pay for that amount of production each year. And then that helps us to develop the budget. Now, if something were to come along in the future, there's always a different way to split this up. But the thought was that with the MWD member agencies and the San Gabriel Valley MWD, the state contractor, it was just an easy way to regionally spread the costs. So that's how that is all set up. But if you look at it, you add the two. So if you add Central Basin and you add Water Replenishment District, Upper Districts looks large, but Central and Water Replenishment District actually are both covering the lower area. And it used to just be Central Basin's bill. Next slide. So we've had some questions about the distribution committee. The distribution committee is appointed by the Protective Association Board, and there's one representative from the upper area, meaning one of the producers that are up in the upper area. There's one rep from the middle area. That happens to be currently that's our chairman, Linda Noriega, because Cal Domestic is basically in the middle of the river area. That's one of the agencies that we would consider. And then the lower area right now is held by WRD. And that's Central Basin South. And what that committee does, which for many, many years, when I first started in the early 90s, when I became involved in the Protective Association, ironically, it was because I worked for Glendora and they wanted somebody from Glendora as a contractual agency and a producer to be involved. It was very secretive what the distribution committee did. They went up behind doors and then they came out. It was kind of like electing a pope, really. And so I had some discussions, not so smooth discussions with a gentleman that some of you remember, Lynn McGoffin, who used to be very involved in Watermaster and the San Gabriel Valley Protective Association. And really had some long discussions about the fact that the producers needed to be more involved and needed to really understand what was going on the river. So we expanded the distribution committee to where any of the members of the Protective Association can be a part of that committee as far as sitting in on what's presented by the county and what decisions are made. And then we also set up to have alternates for that group. But the distribution committee is very key in the sense that in years like this, it's not too big of a deal. But in years when we have, like last year where we had 50, 60,000 acre feet to spread, the county tells us the availability of the spreading and all of that. And then what I've tried to do with the distribution committee in the last few years is to try and get them closer to considering where we are on this credit. Steve's going to talk to you about the River Water Master and the calculation on the river and using some of that spreading on the river when it's available to better manage that credit. Those are my slides. I'll be happy to answer any questions. This stuff is kind of interesting to me, but it might be boring to some. But a lot of people ask about the Protective Association, but honestly, it's one of the most important, even though we meet once a year, maintaining those licenses has been a huge deal. So from the time I was involved, we used to pay in the hundreds, $200 or $300 for those licenses. I think we budgeted this next year now for $25,000 or $30,000 to do those licenses. The state, their fee system a couple of years ago. And then the other big expense for the association is we pay engineering interns from USC to do the groundwater measurement and provide all that reporting.
Mr. Chavez, can I ask him a question?
President Chavez sent me a message. He had to step away for a bit. I'll turn over to Director Santana.
Thank you. Tony, thank you. You spent afternoon with me about 2 months ago on this, and because I didn't know much about the Protective Association. I'm getting a lot of questions lately about Raymond Basin. How does that fit into this?
Well, I mean, it really, Raymond Basin is in a kind of a different watershed, so that really aren't impacted by the licenses. Raymond Basin is totally different in the sense that in the main basin, our judgment, and in the central basin, they both encompass surface diversions and groundwater production. The Raymond Basin, when they put that judgment into place, it doesn't oversee the surface diversions. So City of Pasadena and some of the smaller agencies up in Altadena, They still maintain their own diversion licenses. There's a mechanism in that judgment where we can give people credit. They get a partial credit if they spread the water instead of taking it directly into their system. They get a credit on their production. But that's the biggest tie. The Protective Association just is the San Gabriel River from that canyon all the way down to Seal Beach.
Thank you.
I have no questions, but thank you again for the presentation. We also talked about this a while back, and it's very helpful.
You're welcome, anytime.
You know, it's hard to understand sometimes. I was brought up in El Monte in the 1800s, and it was all agriculture. You know, I lived in a broccoli field basically, and I ate more broccoli than you could believe. But it's interesting.
Well, I mean, that's the only thing I'll leave you with. And even when you talk to Steve, you look at these management mechanisms and how they've been able to flex and grow within how the basin is. My parents bought their house in 1949, not far from where Monrovia's wells are. And the biggest comment when they came back and told the family that they were, and I wasn't born yet, by the way, that they came back and told the family is her brother said, well, that's where we hunt rabbits. So there was nothing out there. And so it's very interesting.
Madam Chair, I have a question for Tony.
Yes, please.
Tony, the Raymond Basin, the relationship with Raymond Basin and South Pasadena and the city of Los Angeles and Pasadena is an interesting relationship. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? Because it appears to me that this city here, South Pasadena, has more in relationship with the Raymond Basin than the main San Gabriel Basin. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, they're downstream from the Raymond Basin. The biggest relationship with South Pasadena is that if you know the history of that area, there was an area called the Raymond Hill, and I think the Raymond Hill Hotel, and that kind of marks the bottom of the Raymond Basin. And so City of South Pass does not have rights in Raymond Basin, but they're just below the Raymond Fault. And then you have Sunny Slope, you have Arcadia and others that are in both basins. And it's mainly due to not necessarily where their service areas are, but where they're drilled, their wells are drilled. A lot of times the wells were drilled upstream because they gained hydraulic pressure when they were at a higher elevation, and it took less energy to spread it. But that's the biggest relationship is what's happening in the Arroyo and some of the Army Corps studies there. The folks from City of Pasadena Public Works are very much involved there. But there's not a lot of that production that happens in South Pasadena.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, Tony, this is Steve. Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
for some reason, I was in the conference room and we lost there. So I'm in my office again. You know, Tony, that was really cool. A really good presentation. I haven't seen that in a long time. Really, really good. Moving into what I'm going to talk about, maybe explaining to the folks how important this distribution committee is going forward, because that's the real practical application of what the Protective Association of the Rights is, how this distribution committee works. So they kind of know
what you're doing. Biggest challenge is going forward is going to be that for a lot of years, my involvement in the association as being president and being a part of the distribution committee was that we always, when we had a credit of 100,000 acre feet or less, we always tried to, in a cooperative manner, try and make sure that the flows on the river that were captured and put in each basin at the end of the day would come more or less as close to 50-50 as we could. In most more recent years, folks in Central Basin, and I know what my words were, where now it's kind of turned to where some of the folks there feel it automatically they should get 50% of what comes out of the canyon. But in reality, what happens is most of the rain that falls on our valley floor ends up in Central Basin. And so just to say there's a straight 50-50 split out of Morris every time that it rains isn't workable to maintain what's a reasonable level of that credit. You know, Steve and I have followed behind people and made the decisions and the suggestion for a lot of years. And I always know I'm not a member of river or water, but I always looked at as, you know, we've seen it turn around fast in a couple of the long-term accountings. But when you get up to the level that we're at now, we're just not seeing where that credit gets eaten away. So there's going to be some discussions to get the Central Basin to acknowledge that really whatever falls on the flat area of our valley is usually conserved below the Whittier Narrows. And so we're working towards that. We've taken the distribution committee on a field trip down to WRD. Steve and I went down with them. We'll see how it goes. Now we had an awesome relationship with Rob Whitaker. Him and I were always able to work things out. And hopefully we can continue to do that between the two basins.
All right, I guess. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I was just going to say, okay, we move on to Steve's presentation.
Hi, everyone. So there was a reason. I just wanted to point out there was a reason why Tony did this stuff like before 1940, because he's so much older than me. He remembers all that stuff. And I'm going to do the later stuff for the more current people. That was an easy one, Tony. Okay, so this is the first slide. That was a great presentation by Tony. That's a good segue. I think, Tom, you're right. It was really a good way to do this, is set up a lot of the old history. This is really a history lesson, a history 101 for everybody, but it kind of segues right into what I'm going to be talking about. This is just a cover sheet, and this is what we're going to do. I'm going to talk about the Long Beach judgment, a little bit about current basin conditions, and then the operating safe yield. Operating safe yield is coming. The board's going to set the operating safe yield for the next fiscal year in May, so we'll talk about that. But this is just a little description of what we're going to talk about. So the first, we're going to talk about the Long Beach judgment, okay? We go to the next slide. We're going back now, so I'm talking about a little bit of history here. I really wasn't here when this happened. I didn't come into this basin until about 1976, 77, so this was all before me, but we've gone through it so often. It is like we, with Tony too, it's like we experienced it. But there, you know, as Tony talked about, there was a lot of administrative management decisions made that even predated this situation. They go clear back to the top with the Protective Association and different kinds of disputes and organizations that were created to try to manage the water supplies of the river and the San Gabriel Valley. So this stuff was going on for a long, long time. As time went on and we got more and more urbanized, okay, it became clear that the water that falls on the watershed, the entire San Gabriel River watershed, was inadequate. There wasn't enough water for the upper area to use all they wanted, and then still leave enough water to get down into the Central Basin through Whittier Narrows. So that's what set up this original complaint that was filed that created the Long Beach judgment, the San Gabriel River Water Master and the Long Beach judgment. And as you can see, 1959, that predates the main San Gabriel Basin judgment, which was an adjudication of the water rights, surface and groundwater rights in the San Gabriel Valley. So we're talking about 1959 right now when this was filed. Main basin adjudication was in like 1971. The plaintiffs were the lower area. You all know Central Basin, Board of Water Commission, Long Beach, Compton. That was the group of producers that filed the action. WRD intervened in 1819 to kind of take over their operations, mostly financial. Well, I shouldn't say that. Mostly financial, but really because WRD is involved much more with the groundwater and Central Basin is much more involved with, as a member agency of MWD, with imported water. So WRD and financially, they're in much better shape. So they when we agreed to it, the upper area said, we don't see you have a problem with that. We, as Tony pointed out, we have a great relationship with Rob Whitaker there at WRD. So having WRD take over their obligation was not a big deal. Defendants, San Gabriel Valley Water Company and 24 other producers, basically they filed action against all of the producers that were currently pumping in the main basin and basically said, hey, we're not getting our fair share of water. Upper District intervened as a defendant. And when they intervened, they basically came in and intervened to represent the producers. So Upper District is named as an intervener. And their position in this is to represent San Gabriel Valley Water Company and the 24 other producers of the original action. So that's why we're here. As I mentioned, the whole thing came along because the flows of the river were not adequate to address both upper and lower area water needs. So so that's why it was created. Way back when, there was actually, it wasn't that long ago, but there was actually rising water down in the Narrows. There was actually swampy areas. There was rising water. There was water that was basically, there was so much water going through the Narrows that actually came up out of the ground and created swampy areas that we call rising water down in the Narrows. And what was going on was the pumping that was going on in the main basin for all of the urban development and the ag and everything that's going on in the main basin. Enough pumping was going on to lower the water levels to a point where the rising water eventually just disappeared. So water's not very deep down there. The groundwater's not very deep, but we don't see a lot of rising water down there like we used to. As you said, Upper District intervened for the producers. One of the big reasons why Upper District intervened was one of the provisions of the Long Beach judgment was that Upper Area basically guaranteed through an engineering evaluation, Upper District basically, Upper Area, the folks up here, guaranteed that the lower area would get their annual entitlement every year. In order to guarantee that, there had to be a mechanism by which money could be raised to pay for imported water if lower area didn't get the amount of water that they were entitled to for that year. Under this judgment, and this is an important thing to remember when we talk about how we manage water on the river, under this judgment, lower area is guaranteed. They are guaranteed through the judgment that they get their entitlement every year. If they don't get it, through surface and groundwater supplies that are delivered every year. In other words, if there's a debit, if they haven't gotten what they're deserved, Upper Area has the obligation to get them the water through several different mechanisms. But we have the obligation, and we have to do it immediately. We have to do it right away. We don't get to carry it over. We don't get to owe it to them. We have to address it right away. If we have a credit, on the other hand, the credit just builds up. So let's just go to the next. To the next slide. Judgment was entered in 65. It basically, as we tried to describe, established a physical solution for the fair division of the water supply of the San Gabriel River system between Upper Area and Lower Area. Again, the Narrows being the dividing line. The fair division, the people that put this together were representatives, engineering representatives of the Upper Area and engineering representatives of the Lower Area, politicians, water managers, all were a part of this. The engineers, some folks much smarter than we are now, than the folks doing this now, I mean, very, very bright people, put together an engineering solution to divide those waters that still works today. And it works very, very well today. So they did a heck of a job putting this together. And it's basically a fair division of the water supply that falls in the watershed between the upper and the lower area. And it's a running calculation to keep things accurate based upon what the hydrologic conditions are, what the rainfall is and the runoff. We address all that. and it determines the lower area's entitlement each year. So it's a very dynamic solution to solving the water supply between the upper and the lower area. Next slide, please. It's a hard one to see, but we just put it there because we use it. This is an engineering map. This is a map that shows all of the areas between upper area and lower area. You see right there in the middle, it's Woodier Narrows Dam, right there in the middle going across. There's a narrows right there, and the narrowest point is where all this stuff is measured. This really isn't a real functional map for people who want to get oriented, but we put it in because this is a map that the engineers use. It shows a lot of the gauging stations. It shows the narrowest section. It shows the important areas that are used in the judgment. And it is part of the adjudication. It was included in the adjudication. Next one, please. Okay, lower area parties. That's the Central Basin folks. As it describes the persons, firms, corporations, private, everybody down there until now is WRD, and they represent all of them down there. Up area defendants, again, all persons, firms, corporations, everybody up here, all the producers, cities, water systems, everybody intervened, represented by upper district. As time sort of went on, the situation where upper district is representing the producers, between the upper district and the water master, the determination was made that it would make more sense for the producers through water master assessments for the producers to pay for the cost of the river water master for the upper area. So as it works now, water master pays upper district through its assessments for the river water master cost of the river water master for the upper area. So even though the upper district is the intervener, upper district bills the water master and water master pays the bill. So the producers are still paying the bill because upper district represents the producers. That's why that was set up that way. Now, different from other water masters, this water master doesn't do much in policy. This river water master is 95 to 95% engineering technical. The river water masters, there's only three. We're all engineers. It's always been engineers that have been the river water masters. And the staff does most of the work, but we don't set policy. All our job is to do is to make sure that the provisions of the judgment, the technical provisions, the accounting, that they're properly followed, and that we do an appropriate engineering accounting of the water supply of the river every year. That's our job. I'm your representative of the upper area. Tom Stetson, my friend, the one who started this company, was the only other representative for the upper area. So there's only been two in the upper area since 1965, Tom Stetson and myself. Lower area, Richard Rohn, Dick Rohn, used to be with Bookman Edison. Bookman Edison is now Navigant. Dick Rohn is only the second representative for the lower area. Max Bookman, who I knew very well too, good friend of Tom Stetson's. Max Bookman from Bookman Edmondson was the original river water master for the lower area. So those are the two upper and lower area. The independent or the neutral, intended to be the neutral member to make sure we had a three-member agency in case there was an issue. We could make a decision. If we had to, we would vote. Is now Bob Gorelli. He's retired executive officer of the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Once he left the regional board, he became assistant GM at Orange County Sanitation Districts. Bob's a great guy, lives here locally, right here in Covina. He is the independent member. Historically, just from a perspective of historic provision, how the history has worked, typically the neutral member has been a retired chief engineer of the LA County Department of Public Works. The folks we work with every day to get the data we need to do the river water master. Public Works, flood control, these are the guys that control the spreading grounds, divert the water, manage the flood control. These are the folks that do all that. And it worked out very well that when there was a retired chief engineer who was familiar with the system and familiar with what we do, was appointed as the neutral member. and as time's gone on, you know, they've passed on. We've had people that, you know, as they get older, we've lost representatives. And it just so happens that the last time that happened, we did not have a chief and engineer available. We did a little searching around and came up with Bob Gorelli. He's very familiar with what we're doing. Very, very smart guy, obviously. So Bob Gorelli is our neutral member, and we work very well together. We only have, just so you folks know, we only have really two Water Master meetings a year. We have one at the beginning of the year, which we just had, which we work with the staff to develop what we're going to accomplish this year, what things staff needs to do. One of our obligations at the River Water Master is to make sure the measuring facilities that measure the water supply, both surface and groundwater, to make sure they're in good shape and they're accurate. We make sure that the rain gauge stations, because a lot of what we do depends upon the measurement of rain on the basin floor. We have to make sure the rain gauge are operating and accurate and that they make sense. So there's maintenance that needs to be done all year on the facilities that we use to implement the provisions of the judgment. So we have one meeting where the staff brings us whatever issues may be coming up that we may need to address this year other than our normal operations. And then we also do our budget. And so we get a budget for the year, what we're going to accomplish, and we approve that. The only other time we meet as Water Masters is at the end of the year, once all the records in and the staff has pulled all the data together and evaluated the year and determined how much water was how much water the lower area was entitled to. And we measure all the different flows, recycled water, flood flows, water that's put into spreading grounds. We measure all of those things and put it all together into an annual report. So the next time, the second time we get together is to basically review all of the calculations, all of the numbers, and the written annual report. And then we go through the whole report and then ultimately finalize the report and it gets distributed. So those are the two times we meet as River Water Masters. Next slide, please. Oh, annual accounting. So the way it's done is we have a 10-year rolling annual average of rainfall on the valley floor. We have rain. We have stations that are established. They're in the judgment. They're identified from the beginning. We use those stations. If we lose one, we have the obligation to determine how we replace it, where we get a substitute station. And a lot of work goes into make sure it's correct because it's a very important number. So basically, the lower area's annual entitlement is determined based upon a rolling prior 10-year average of annual rainfall. So we get all the rainfall from all the stations, we put it all together, we average it up, and then once we averaged from the 10 years, there is a table in the judgment that was prepared that takes that number and rolls it over and gives them an annual entitlement in thousands of acre feet that they're entitled to for that year. So that's how we determine each year what lower area is supposed to get under the judgment. This is what we have to guarantee them that they get is that lower area entitled. And it changes every year. Usable water delivered to lower area. That's what we have to deliver is something called usable water. Usable water is a defined term. It's not just whatever gets through the narrows. It has to be certain kind of water that is actually conserved and received and used for conserved for beneficial uses in the lower area. As an example, there are times when we have very, very heavy rainfall and very, very large flows of floodwaters that go down the river and bypass the spreading grounds because they're full or because they're dirty, because they have a lot of silted in the water, it's just dirty water. You've seen sometimes when we get heavy flows, the water's not very pretty. When that water goes through the narrows and doesn't get conserved and goes to the ocean, it's not considered usable water. So we don't get credit for it. They don't get it in the ground, therefore we don't get credit for it. So our job is to work with the lower area folks and the flood control district to make sure, as much as we can, make sure that the highest percentage of local water going down the river is conserved either in our area or in lower area so that there's credit. There's a usable water supply credit given as part of the Long Beach judgment. And I got to say, between the upper and lower area, and certainly flood control department, public works, they do a fantastic job. It's amazing how much water is conserved, how little water is actually lost to the ocean throughout the year, even during flood situations. What a great job they do. So that's usable water. It's a defined term. We have to follow that, and then we use that to determine whether or not we have given them the lower area entitlement as usable water. The upper area annual credit, if we deliver more water than the entitlement in usable water, on paper we get a credit, and we carry that credit to the next year, and then it's evaluated again. So that's how that's done. Upper area annual debit. If we did not deliver enough water for them under the entitlement, usable water under the entitlement for a particular year, what happens then is if we're carrying a credit on the books, it's deducted from the credit. That's fine. If we're not carrying a credit, then there are provisions in the judgment where we have to deliver the water. The first water delivered can be, there's a certain quantity of water, amount of water, the 14735 there, where we can actually reimburse them for their cost of recycled water they get out of like San Jose Creek. So if we do have a debit, okay, one of the first things we can do is say, okay, if it's less than 14735, we'll just pay you for whatever the amount is for the recycled water that you've already gotten and paid for. We'll just reimburse you for that. Once it gets past that, we have to deliver imported water. And we have done that in the past. We've had to do that. That is what is called the makeup water assessment that Watermaster has. It has not been implemented, but it hasn't been used for probably 15 years now because we've got a big credit on the books. We haven't needed it. But the makeup water assessment is there just to meet any debit that occurs with the lower area on the Long Beach judgment. So that's how that works.
Steve, this is Tom. Hey, yeah. Tony Campiello has his hand up, and also just letting you guys know, we're approaching 9 o'clock, so if we could try and move it along a little bit.
Yeah, just one quick point on this calculation, especially for Dr. Fellow and for Mr. Trevino. You know, as you hear me talk on the Watermaster Board about working with the sanitation district in order to allow the MS4 partners to divert and have water treated by them, the mechanism that we came up with and we proposed to the Sand District is to involve that water, include that water in these calculations so that we know where it went, who's using it, and all of that. And then that doesn't hinder those folks with their projects.
Yeah, good. Because that is a new issue. I'll point out again, because it's so important, when you say upper area debit, it has to be addressed immediately. So that's the guarantee that we try to emphasize is lower area is guaranteed to get their water. Their entitlement, they will get either that air in the water that's delivered to them or immediately after that. We have an obligation to make sure they get their entitlement. We don't have any guarantees. We don't have any guarantees how much water we get. So that's why we try to put a good, you know, rational and objective judgment into how we manage the water out of the canyon. That's why Tony's discussion about the distribution committee stuff is so important, because good judgment is needed how to handle the water that comes down the river, knowing that lower area will get their water no matter what. They always do. Upper area has no guarantees, so we have to manage it to make sure we get the water we need to manage our basin. So next slide. I'll do real quick the current accounting. This is where we are right now. This was this last year. For the 1920 summary, rainfall was 17. The rainfall last year was 17.8. 10-year average, 14.2. Okay, long-term average beyond, you know, the long term is about 18 inches. So you see 10-year average rainfall is only 14.2. So what that did is it significantly impacted lower areas entitlement. As the rainfall goes down, their entitlement goes down. So it's about, you know, 65-60% of long-term average entitlement, okay? So the lower entitlement was only 65,700 acre feet based upon that 10-year average rainfall. It normally is up around 100 to 110,000, and that is surface water supply through the narrows and groundwater measured. Their entitlement was only 65,000. We delivered to them usable water. That was in the annual report. 93,166 acre feet. That's what we calculated that they got as usable water, which means the annual credit for just last year was 27,466 acre feet. That's a credit. We gave them way more than they were entitled to under the judgment, okay? The accrued credit going into the year, when we started the year, was 192,602. We added the 27, and now we're at 220,068 acre feet. So you can see we are carrying a very large credit on the Long Beach judgment. We've delivered over the years significantly more water to them than the judgment requires under their entitlement. So next one. Now, Tony talked earlier about years when we had debits. We just happened to put this in. What this shows is on an annual basis, the accounting. This is whether we had a credit or a debit. You can see in the early years, we had over to the left, we had a little bit of a debit. Then we had some credit. Then we had some pretty good debits. Then it kind of it meandered around up and down. But if you look from the middle of the page to the right, everything above that line is all credit. You can see how our credit, our annual credits have gone. That's just based upon the way the basin, way the hydrology has been, and urbanization, and the fact that there's a lot more hard surface in the basin floor. When rainfall does come down and land on our basin floor, a lot of it runs off, a lot of it goes to the river, and a lot of it goes down, and we're able to conserve a lot of it into the lower area. So we believe, we've had our own discussions, I won't guarantee it, but as engineers, we've looked at this, and our feeling, and I think Dick Roan, who is the lower area representative, agrees with me, we don't think there will ever be another debit or a debit that requires we deliver water to the lower area based upon the way the two areas upper and lower area operate today. Unless something drastic happens, even in the drought, we're still developing credit. So we don't think we'll ever get back to a debit. So that's the end of River Water Master. In case anybody has any quick questions on that, Tom, when I do basin conditions, that'll be an engineer's report too.
Well, good. So we cover that as well.
Yeah. So I'll just go to current basin conditions real quick. Key whale, as of the 12th, 197.2. I think the latest went out, it's 197. So we're down 3 feet from our minimum level. Still dropping a little bit. It's about over a foot from the prior month. Rainfall kind of low. We all know it's bad. This shows San Gabriel Dam. That's all the way up in the dam. This is where we get most of the rainfall. Not very much. About 29% of average for this time of year, not very good. Puddingstone Dam, which is considered our basin floor, this is showing about 35%. I think we're now, this is about 4.6, this is when the slide was made as of February. I think we're a little over 6 inches now, but that still only gets us to about 40%. So we're not doing very good there. Next slide. Local and imported water conserved through January. 30,000 acre feet. We normally conserve on an annual basis over 100,000 acre feet. Very, very low. 30% of long-term average. Not very much. We've got supplemental water available, showing 10% there, state water. I just got a text this morning, and maybe Tom got it too. I think they just lowered it to 5. I think state board DWR just lowered it to 5%. So
they did, yes. Yesterday.
They're looking at a dry year. So that's that slide. There's not much more there. Colorado River is normal deliveries. I'll go real quick to the operating safe yield, and I'll do this pretty quickly, just let you know what's going on. First of all, the most important thing to point out about the operating safe yield that makes sure people understand is I don't set it. The Water Master Board sets the operating safe yield. They vote on it, and they set it. My job is to present a preliminary report on operating safe yield, in other words, my thinking on it, at the April meeting, which is coming up next in 2 weeks. So that's my job, and then to take comments in, and then to come back to the board at the May meeting and deliver a final recommendation or a final report on operating safe yield. My report is just the conditions and what I think the recommendation should be. The Water Master makes the decision, and I'll show you that at the end of this. So I talk about it being done in April. These are some of the things we look at. The things we look at to determine the operating safe yield really haven't changed over the years, but the emphasis has, especially with the drought. So we look a little more at when things get drastic, like water levels get really low, we look a little more at those things than we would at other things. But we do look at pretty much everything. We have to look at carryover rights. We have to look at water and cyclic storage. We have to look at the availability of imported water to replenish our basin if we want to buy water. Like right now, only 5%. We can't even buy water right now because there's no state water available for us to buy. So we look at all of these conditions when we write the preliminary operating safe yield report. And it just as a matter of information, Jenny, who's on the call here, gave me the draft. I reviewed it yesterday and I gave her my comments back. So the draft is pretty much done and ready to go for April. Next slide, please. This is what I wanted to show about our conditions right now. And the key ones here, local water replenishment. This is water out of our canyon, our local water supply. The two key ones here are 73-74 through 2010. This is before the drought. Okay. You can see 110,000 acre feet. Okay. That's local water. I mentioned to you over 100,000 acre feet. This year's only 30,000. That's the number I'm talking about. That's long-term before the drought, what we typically were able to get from local water supply into our basin. If you add the drought in, it drops down to about 100,000, but roughly 110,000 is what we get every year. Through the drought, 2012 through 2019, 9 years, the average was less than 60,000. So we are looking at easily 50,000 acre feet a year for 9 years. You multiply 9 years times 50,000 acre feet a year that we're not getting, we're getting up to some serious water there. It's almost 500,000 acre feet that didn't get in our basin from local water supplies. And that affects our water levels and our water supply. Local rainfall, same kind of deal. Before the drought through 2010, the average was about 19.23. If you add the drought in, it's dropped down to about 18. But you look at the drought period, clear down at 12 and a half. That's 7 inches, almost 7 inches of rainfall a year for those 9 years that we're not seeing in the basin. These are huge numbers. And 2021 is not looking any better. Both the water supply and rainfall not looking better. It's not good. So that's where we are right now. Adopted operating safe yield. If you look to the top fiscal year 11-12, that's when the drought kind of started. This was the operating safe was about 210. Watermaster, we set it at 210. The board set it at 210. I think the drought, we saw that it was dry. The board reacted in 12-13 and lowered it to 200. I think by 13-14, I think the board was still thinking that it's going to rain someday. We got to rain. Let's not go too far, because I don't want to lower it too far and then we get a bunch of rainfall. Let's not panic. So they dropped it 20,000 to 180, trying to address the fact there was a drought. And then by that time, the water levels were dropping and everybody sort of got the clue that this was serious. There's a reality check. And so from 14-15 all the way through 2021, you can see it's been set at 150,000. The only time it's been set lower than that in the history of the judgment was 1 year back in the 70s. It was set at 140,000. This is the lowest it's ever been set. And you can see how many years it's been set there. Pretty amazing record right there of operating safe yield. Historic low, key well. This is just some key well information. I think you're all familiar with that. But the operating safe yield, I think that's an important one. The next one, which I think is also good for you to see, because it's interesting. We just threw in the engineer's recommendation since the judgment was entered and the actual operating safe yield set by the board. And if you look over to the bottom of the right side, you can see the last eight years, they match up. So apparently whatever happened, I got smarter over the last couple of years because I matched the board amazingly in those years. But it's interesting just to look to see how things went. There was a period of time back in, let's see when it is, back in 98, 99, where we had it up to 200 Oh, no, it is. 05, 06, 06, 07. You can see it was at 240,000 acre feet for 2 years in a row. Unbelievably high operating safe yield. And I can tell you what kind of happened back then was that some folks that were on the board and were influential on the board, some folks thought that the basin was so resilient that we could set the operating safe yield pretty much anywhere you wanted and it would recover. So why are we restricting ourselves? Let's set it up where it doesn't affect. Where we have plenty of water rights. Everybody has all the water they need. So they set it up that high. One of the things that was missed back then, we were aware of it certainly, but what was missed by setting it up there, you see what the recommendation was 220, 210, it was 240, what they said. One of the things they missed back then is under the judgment, this is a key component of the judgment, under the judgment, you set an operating safe yield that high, people in the basin, pumpers in the basin with the rights, only pump what they need. That's all they're going to pump is what they need. So if they don't, and if they're allocated a water right of, let's say, 10,000 acre feet, but they only need 6,000 acre feet and only pump 6,000, what happens is they carry over that 4,000 to the next year that they didn't use. It's the first water used in the next year. So if you set the operating safe yield high again the next year, you're building up a carryover account for producers for water rights. That is very difficult to recover from because the only mechanism we had back then before the RDA, which Tony developed, the only mechanism we had back then to put water back in the basin if we started getting low was a replacement water assessment. And if all of the producers have huge water rights build up, huge carryover rights, there's no replacement water. So the basin suffered and water levels dropped until we could correct that So I think that's the end of my...
safe field that high? I can't remember who he was.
I can't remember, but I think it was one of the district representatives.
Yeah, I think it was. Thank you, Steve.
You bet.
President Chavez, are you back on?
Yep. Yes, I am. So just want to thank... Mr. Johnson and others for their presentation. So does the board have any questions on the presentation? Hearing no questions, Mr. Love, are we good on that item?
Yes, we are. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good. So we'll go to item number 7, which is informational items. Those are in your packets, press releases, and news articles. We'll go to item number 8, attorney's report, Mr. O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. Just to report, in the past few weeks, I've been working with Evelyn on a few matters, one concerning the standby charge, which will be coming up on the next couple of meetings, also on some employee and hiring issues. And I think like a lot of people these days, we still can't avoid the COVID issue. And we had an interesting development in that the Metropolitan Water District shared with member agency council and general managers a letter that they have issued to their employees, essentially identifying them as essential workers and being thus eligible for vaccinations. You may know that in LA County currently, I think we're the categories 1A and 1B are eligible for vaccinations, and there is an identification of essential and emergency service workers. So I worked with Tom, and we were able to kind of craft a somewhat customized letter that we shared with the district employees. And in the event they want to get a vaccination, we think this could help them make an appointment to do so. So I think, Tom, that's gone out to the staff, correct?
It has, and at this point, a majority of our employees are in the process of being vaccinated. I think many of them have already had their first dose. Yeah. Some had the Johnson & Johnson, the single dose as well. So we're in progress. Once we get the numbers, we'll share that with the board at a later time.
And I think the last development in that, which is still in process, is we're seeing now, we're being asked, can employers, public agency employers, require their employees to be vaccinated. It raises a host of issues. evidently one agency in the state has done that, is now being sued over it. People are objecting for religious reasons and for other reasons. But I think there's going to be some new law made this year in the employment field on this issue. So I'll be sure to keep Tom and the staff apprised as we track those developments. That concludes my report.
Thank you. Is there any questions from directors? If not, thank you, Mr. O'Neill. And we'll go to item number 9, General Manager's report. Mr. Love.
Yeah, I just want to share one item. This was mentioned earlier regarding the state water project allocation set at 5%. I want to show you this little bar chart from Metropolitan. This was prepared prior to the yesterday's announcement from DWR on the allocation. And what it shows you is if you take this up to the top bar of about 1.57 million acre feet, that is Metropolitan Water District's projected demand this year. It does include a little bit of system losses, which they always account for. And then the solid bars show them what they estimate is their available supply of 1 million acre feet from the Colorado River Aqueduct and about 191,000 acre feet from the State Water Project Table A entitlement, meaning they would need to take about 375,000 acre feet out of storage. So if you take that 191 Table A entitlement, reduce it by half to 5%, then that's about an additional 100,000 acre feet Metropolitan will have to pull out of their storage portfolio. But remember, at the end of 2020, Metropolitan Water District did set a new record for amount of water they have in their storage portfolio at about 3.7 million acre feet. So this 475,000 acre feet represents about 10% of Met's storage portfolio. And frankly, a lot of this is due to the demands on Metropolitan for imported water over the last several years since the beginning of the drought have been declining. In fact, last year was one of their lowest water demand years in about 30 years. So the community's efforts on conservation is certainly helping in that regard. So I just want to give you that perspective on how this change in the state water project allocation. I mean, when you go from a very low allocation of 10% to a lower allocation of 5%, we're already talking about very small numbers of delivery from the state water project. So if you want to see any silver lining on it, at least, you know, we weren't expecting to have a 40 or 50% state water project allocation. And I'm going to contradict what Steve Johnson said earlier, even at a 5% allocation, if we did have funding to purchase imported water, we could take deliveries. But all of the assessments and producer payments through Watermaster are already earmarked to pay for the water that's already been delivered in the Metropolitan Cyclic account through our purchase agreement with Metropolitan. But if there is extra money, Tony always said is he'll empty the piggy bank to buy extra water if the money's available. That concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Any questions from directors at this time? If not, we'll go to item number 10, directors' comments, and we'll start with Director Fellow. Director Fellow for comments.
Yeah, I was just, Tom mentioned about the state water project allocation. And I just wanted to mention, Tom, I was reading a Facebook last night and there was some agencies in the northern part or central part of California, Central Valley, that received no allocation, are going to receive zero. I don't know how that's possible, but that's going to be tragic. And unfortunately, yesterday was World Water Day, and Jeff called it the California Lack of Water Day. But it's serious. But as Tom mentioned, demands are down. I also wanted to inform you that at the executive meeting yesterday, we were briefed on the general manager search. By April 2nd, the directors who have signed a confidentiality statement will receive a booklet of the candidates. There's 23 candidates. Seven have been eliminated by the headhunter because they lack the experience, but we will know their names. April 5th, the special executive session will determine 14 or 15 of those candidates who will be invited for first round interviews. April 14th and 15th, there'll be the first round of interviews will take place online. And then May 11th, the final round of interviews will be held, and I believe that will be face-to-face. A contract will be awarded to the new GM by June 8th, hopefully. And yesterday, there was also an integrated resource plan committee meeting. It was 3 hours long and very interesting, but and basically it talked about what drives the need for water. And again, it's residential demands for water, 78%, but it was kind of an interesting session. That's the way it is with MET this week. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We'll go to our next director, Garcia.
No comments.
Thank you. Director Trevino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a comment. Maybe Tony or Tom can shed some light on this. You know, Metropolitan's rate refinement process, it's on a biennial budget. MET operates on a biennial budget. And the process is ramping up to establish mechanisms for raising revenue for the 23-24 budget cycle. The CFO, Kasani, is consulting a small group of member agencies, strategic advisors to develop the work plan and alternatives for a larger working group comprised of all 26 member agencies. The process is important because in the midst of declining water sales and revenue, there's a push by some member agencies, including MODOC, to increase MWD fixed charges on members that are not primarily dependent on imported water. This would increase costs to Upper District. Even if we conserve and even if we recover local groundwater supplies to use instead of imported water, have we voiced our concerns on that issue?
Actually, we have discussed that issue. In fact, as we look at our future for dependence on Metropolitan and the other Metropolitan member agencies, continued dependence on Metropolitan. And so clearly, with Upper District, we will either be dependent on Metropolitan for imported water from Northern California, or we'll be dependent on Metropolitan with recycled water from the Carson Recycled Water Project. Whereas other Metropolitan, so right now, majority of MET's revenues come from the sale of water. So as we continue to purchase water, yeah, we're going to continue to pay for those costs. But member agencies who have plans and have, in fact, rolled off of dependence on Metropolitan supplies are paying much less of the bill because most of the bill comes on the purchase of water. So as we move, if we move to fixed charges, those agencies who are rolling off of Metropolitan will pay more because they will still, unless they can completely divorce themselves from Metropolitan, they will still rely on Metropolitan's facilities for emergency supplies or supplies when their other supplies are hit a dry year. And so these fixed charges would create a mechanism where all Metropolitan agencies pay their fair share, even if they're not buying a lot of water from Metropolitan. If we don't move to some form of fixed charges, then those Metropolitan agencies who continue to buy a significant amount of water, like Upper District, will in fact pay more. So, Director Trevino, I think the opposite is the case. If there are not more fixed charges developed, I mean, the only way we could avoid paying more to MET is if we bought less water. And so if we were planning on having our recycled water project, that of course there's not a sufficient water supply that we could roll off of purchasing MET water, then I would argue that fixed charges would not be beneficial to Upper District. So that's the position we're taking as we look at this. We haven't really gotten into the discussion with Metropolitan over the issue of whether these charges should be fixed or not fixed. Right now we're talking about principles of rate setting. And then the first major rate discussion that needs to occur prior to completion of the budget and rate setting next year is over the demand management charge, used to be the water stewardship charge, that needs to be developed in a different way. That charge has been suspended for 2 years. while the Metropolitan staff and the member agencies review it. Hope that answered your question, Director Trudeau.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you. So we'll go to our next director, Santana.
Thank you. Just wanted to say once again, thank you to Tony and Steve for the presentation. You know, it's I always learn more and more from these presentations and, you know, learning about the intricacies. And it's just, it's really neat to me this time. What I really take away from it on top of all the knowledge is just how everything really is changing as we move forward, especially with the river judgment and that chart that Steve showed, or the Long Beach judgment. So, really good information, and so important to have the history of everything and to, keep on top of it, which I'm, you know, obviously you are as we, move forward into the future.
Thank you. And then, my comments, again, to Tony and to Mr. Johnson with their report. It was very information, good information there. Kind of wanted to talk about a little bit about what went on at in Boulder, Colorado, with the shooting there. It was another sad event in American history, and my son took it just as bad. He's a graduate of out in Boulder, and he graduated from the University of Colorado there in Boulder, and lived there for several years, and you know, really loved that community. In fact, he was even thinking about moving out there permanently because it's so beautiful. But it's just another tragic, sad chapter in our lives. And hopefully everybody is okay. And hopefully we get through all this. So with that,
I tell you something, Mr. Chavez. That's
yes. Go ahead.
It's horrible. I'm glad you brought that up. I don't know if you saw, I don't think it's been in the newspapers, I'm not sure yet, but Pasadena City College this week, they had a Zoom meeting of the president and some of the staff, and they were talking to Dr. Brown, who's a specialist in diversity, and she was working on a plan for the board of directors. And as they were holding the meeting, somebody broke into her house, killed a member of her family, and this is going on in the Zoom meeting. And so faculty in the Zoom meeting called the police. And by the time they got there, she was dead. And it's just been an awful situation. I don't know what kind of world we're living in, but I don't know.
Well, on that note, it's kind of sad. I heard on the radio when someone says we're back to normal. And that's a sad reality after COVID. The news broke. It was interesting. It broke at the same time that the Colorado Buffaloes were playing in the NCAA tournament in that afternoon, and the basketball team was alerted to the news in the middle of the game, and they eventually lost the game. And you can't. I mean, it's two heartbreaks for us Colorado fans out there, but certainly the shooting outweighs anything else, and it's sad that happened. But that's where we are today. So let's pray for the families and do what we can. On that, let's go to item 11. Any future agenda items? If not, then we'll go to item 12 before we, as the attorney, there's no closed session items today?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. No closed session.
Okay. So before we adjourn, Mr. Love, is there any other business that the board needs to dispense with at this time?
Not at this time, President Chavez.
Okay. With that, we'll adjourn in memories of those who lost their lives in Boulder, and, we'll adjourn. Thank you.